Mental Breakdown Morning Show. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
And I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
It is a terrific Tuesday. It is Tuesday.
Cooling off a little bit.
It is cooling off.
My daughter said it's cold out this morning.
It was nice outside.
Maybe 85.
Well, yesterday morning it had a little nip to it, and this morning it has a little bit of a bite to it. It's nice. For
getting,
Florida.
Getting cool. Getting too cold.
Well.
Florida's supposed to be warm and sunny.
I can't respond to that.
Okay.
After the weekend that I had in the sun.
In the sun. It was hot this week.
I can't wish it to be that hot for right now.
We'll take a little cool weather.
I'm enjoying the cool weather. So. Yeah. So Tuesday is Mental Health in the News Day.
Right.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about an article that was published yesterday in the Huffington Post. The title of the article is, "You May Be Able to Train Your Brain to Be Fearless." That's provocative.
What attracted my attention was train your brain.
Right.
Because there are all these programs. We talked about this last week.
We talked about it last week, right.
All these brain training programs, and we hear about the plasticity, the neuroplasticity of the brain, that you can change your brain. As we said last week, you can change your brain, but it takes a lot of work.
Right,
I mean,
it does.
It's a very effortful process. It's like making a new memory. Those don't happen easily.
Absolutely.
It takes effort. And changing your brain, you can change your brain, but it takes an enormous amount of effort.
Right.
And a considerable amount of time. It doesn't happen quickly.
It does. And, you know, when we were going through these articles there was another article that was, it was highlighted this week, but it's actually an article from several years ago talking about changing the brain of people with post-traumatic stress disorder through use of transcendental meditation. And I was thinking, you know, that's great. We've talked about meditation before, but this article, what I really like about it is it's really getting into some of the technology that we have today. Right. And again, kind of in contrast to what we talked about last week with things like Lumosity and all of those, this is really, really hardcore science.
And that's what I like about this, that we have done, you mentioned transcendental meditation. Mm-hmm. That was popular back in the 70s.
Right.
You know, people were doing TM, transactional analysis and transactional meditation. So people have been doing this for years, decades.
Right.
And we didn't know why it worked. We couldn't really demonstrate in any conclusive way why it works. The exciting thing today is that we have technologies where we can actually measure changes in the brain.
Absolutely.
We should clarify what we mean by changes in the brain, but at least we have some technologies that will open the window a little bit.
Right.
You know, reveal a little bit about what's going on in the brain.
And as we're talking about this, it always reminds me of when I was first training with the well-known Dr. Archie Silver, many years ago.
Right.
And I remember I had just started graduate school, and I went in and I was so excited because Dr. Silver, when I started working with him, he was in his late 80s.
Was he really?
Yeah, he had retired. This trips me out. It's just in my brain. It's just he retired from New York University in 1978. I was four.
He retired.
He retired from New York University in 1978, and then he moved to Florida and he began working at the University of South Florida and had a second career in the Department of Psychiatry.
He really did. He was there for 20 years, though.
Yeah, yeah. And so he retired in the mid 2000s, and
I didn't realize
sadly,
he retired in 78.
Later passed away, but he was.
Can I tell you something?
Huh?
I started in 1978. You were four.
I was four. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
So
there's some overlap here, isn't there? He retired. I started. You were born.
You can't you can't say those kinds of things in the middle of a podcast because it makes me want.
Makes
to,
you laugh.
Jokes and stuff.
Okay.
But
sorry.
I remember in 1999 when I started graduate school, I was hearing about these wonderful approaches and new ideas for
1999.
Doing different things, yes. And I went in and I was eager and I was, Dr. Silver, you won't believe what I heard. And he just entertained me and smiled. And he goes, Bernie.
It's called being humored.
We've known that since the 40s. I was like, I said, thank you, Dr. Silver. I appreciate it.
Even your mother wasn't born in the 40s.
No. But, you know, what was great about it is that he really introduced me to all those really classic texts that, you know, I was the only one in my graduate program that had Gazelle and Ametruda's developmental disability book that was published in the 1940s.
Well, the wonderful thing about Dr.
Silver... It's all exactly the same as it is now.
Right. The wonderful thing about Dr. Silver is that he was a... colleague of the people who started many of the learning disabilities movement, started back in the 40s and 50s. He was there. They were people he knew on a first name basis.
Yeah.
And that's what always is exciting to me, because we read them as historical figures. Mm-hmm. He actually had lunch with them at conferences, and they were colleagues. They discussed the same kinds of things.
Yeah, he would always... And those of you who don't work in the field, these names won't mean anything
right.
to you.
Yeah,
you know. But, you know, we're sitting there talking and he mentions Loretta and I'm thinking, it's just Loretta Bender, the woman who was a hallmark as it relates to visual motor skills and visual motor, Loretta.
So he wasn't impressed that you knew about all these brain imaging techniques.
He wasn't impressed. The only thing he was impressed with was how quickly I could send an email. He would say, Bernie, why don't you just call them? I was like, Dr. Silver, it would be so much faster just to send them an email. Just call them.
So you
just
were...
Just call them.
Then, never mind.
I could get my stats done fast, though, and he liked that. Okay. No, he was wonderful and very patient and taught me so much. But I don't know why we got off on that tangent, but...
Because of the technology.
Oh, because of the technology. Because the technology now allows us to look at what we've sort of known from the past, and now we can sort of quantify it by looking at it all through the same technology. And so what they talk about in this article is really something that we're looking at and planning to build here in our practice, which is some basic neurofeedback and qualitative EEG, QEEG models for dealing with mental health conditions, especially mood-related disorders and anxiety.
Right.
So what they did in this study, or what this article talks about with the study, is that they looked at both EEG, which measures the electrical activity of your brain, but it only goes in just a little bit. It doesn't go very deep into your brain. It really just measures the electrical activity on the outside of your brain.
Right.
And so there's some limitations to it.
Yeah, and it's important to understand that when we talk about measuring brain activity, you can only measure, right now, we can measure only a couple of things reliably. One is the electrical activity in the cortex.
Right.
But the cortex is just a thin covering of the brain. It doesn't include all the other deep structures where the emotions are. And fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, small f, capital M, capital R, capital I, which measures blood flow.
Right.
Okay. And so you infer activity. You infer brain activity because the blood goes where the activity is.
Right.
Okay. You have to bring new oxygen to those active areas. And so if you know where the blood is, you can infer that that's where the activity is.
Right, because that's the way we've sort of classically looked at the way in which different regions of the brain function, because we either inject someone with a slightly radioactive material that will bind to glucose or bind to oxygen or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so we inject the person with that. We have them perform a task and then measure where that radioactive material is in their brain. And presumably, the hypothesis, which perhaps a pretty strong hypothesis, is that wherever most of the oxygen is, or wherever most of the glucose is going, that's where the region of the brain that's functioning during that activity.
Right, and those colorful maps you see of the brain, that's what it is. The different colors represent the amount of oxygen and glucose going to a particular area. So you're not actually measuring what the neurons are doing.
Right.
You're measuring where the blood is going, and you're inferring that those neurons are more active because that's where the fuel is going.
Right. Okay. Now, fMRI works differently. It doesn't require the radioactive material.
Right.
And it's more like a really fancy X-ray. An MRI is basically an X-ray of tissue. An MRI by itself doesn't look at functioning or what's going on or anything. functional MRI kind of enhances that, but it does so without the need for the injection radioactive
materials. You don't want to put radioactive material in your brain unless you have to.
Right.
So those are the use of radioactive material is done under very, very unique circumstances.
Right.
So we don't do those kind of studies to look at learning disabilities or reading problems. We're allowed to if we're injecting the dye anyway.
Right. Now, so what they did was they used the functional MRI so that they could look at deep brain structures, in particular the amygdala, which is there's one on each side, sort of behind your eyes, into the center of your brain. They're almond shaped, very small things, right at the tip of your hippocampus. Ah, we mentioned hippocampus last week.
Yeah, we'll get into the geography of the brain.
Uh-huh.
But the amygdala are sort of, if you go about an inch below your eyes and drill in about an inch or two, you would hit the amygdala.
Yeah.
You know, so
don't do that at home, though.
Geographically. Not to be done at home. Right?
That's not something you do at home.
But that's where you would look. And the word amygdala means almond.
Right.
It's Latin for almond.
And so and because the amygdala is deep into the brain, the EEG can't detect it, but we know that the amygdala is really important as it relates to stress and anxiety and emotional reactivity to things happening in our environment, fight or flight and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so they used a combination of EEG and fMRI to measure the activity in the amygdala with the functional MRI and coupled it with neuroactivity through the EEG, and put people through a series of activities, practices, where they had to exercise their brain in different ways to reach some or attain some desired outcome. So, for example, there would be a noise playing in their earphones or headphones, and they would have to think or engage in some brain activity, which the researchers didn't tell them what it is. They would have to think in different ways or calm themselves in different ways and to try to lower the volume of the sound. And what the study participants didn't know is that what they were really measuring was the activity in the amygdala through the fMRI, trying to see if they could calm that.
Right.
And so through that process, they found that with some of these neurofeedback or biofeedback types of processes, they were able to help people calm their amygdala, which in turn would calm stress and calm fear and calm anxiety and depression, all those kinds of things.
And I suspect what was happening, and this has implications if you raise a teenager, I suspect what's happening is that the fMRI was measuring amygdala function and the EEG was measuring cortical function.
Right.
Because we always talk about the amygdala is the deep structures of our brain that produce emotions, and the cortex inhibits those emotions.
Right.
So what we're really talking about is the generation of emotion and the control of those emotions. And this would have important because what we want to do with teenagers, because teenagers have lots of emotion, not enough inhibition.
Right.
So they tend to make emotional decisions rather than rational decisions.
Right.
That kind of defines a teenager.
Right.
Okay. They're more emotional. They're hyper reactive. They're hyper responsive because their cortex isn't keeping up with the amygdala.
Right.
The amygdala develops first and is functioning well. The cortex develops later, especially the frontal lobe of the cortex develops later.
Right. And now most offices can't have a functional MRI machine. I mean, these things are huge and expensive and so what they were doing in this research is they're working to develop a system where you can just use the EEG, which is relatively inexpensive.
Far less.
Yeah. You can use the EEG system and the neurofeedback system to gain the same outcome without having to have the monitor of the fMRI in your office.
Right. So you can do the cortical part. So what you're actually doing is you're improving the ability of the brain to inhibit emotions from the subcortical structures, the midbrain structures that produce emotion.
Right.
So what you're doing is you're It's like exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like your cortex is lifting weights, if yeah. you will. You're putting it in the gym for a half hour a day.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what they are doing is they're developing a program right. that is specific or sort of encourages you to exercise your brain in a specific way mm-hmm. that will inhibit those underlying That's systems right. That's right. and help you calm your emotions.
The underlying systems, we refer to them as being obligate, as in obligatory. They're going to react because they're life-saving.
Right.
I mean, and so they're going to do their job because it's that emotional response, mm-hmm. like fight or flight. The mm-hmm. amygdala controls fight or flight. So those things are obligatory responses because that's what keeps us alive.
Right.
But in most cases, they're reacting to non-lethal or right. non-threatening.
Yeah, a chemistry test is not a life-threatening. Well. Right.
But you get stressed, and right. so you have to learn how to control that. And the control is from the cortex.
Right.
And that's what we're going to measure, that electrical activity, and exercise those brain structures so that they're stronger and better able to inhibit or limit your emotional response. Yes. That'd be a fabulous thing for teenagers, people with anger control, mm-hmm, people mm-hmm. who get upset very quickly.
And I mentioned specifically people with depression, people with yeah. anxiety disorders and PTSD right. and those kinds of things. So mm-hmm. so this is a really interesting yeah. Study that again demonstrates that we can, through various exercises and procedures, change the way in which our brain is regulating itself.
Did they say how long they did this? I forgot.
It was a few weeks.
Yeah, so it takes weeks yeah, it or takes months time. To make these changes. So it's not something that happens quickly. Right. It's like any other exercise program. You don't go out and run a marathon. You gradually build up, and it right. takes a long time to get in condition, the kind of condition you need to run a marathon
right.
or to be a triathlete. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the same kind of thing. It's a long, arduous task. It's not easy to change the brain. Right. Can be done, however.
Right. Mm-hmm. So
that's a good article.
So yeah. So if you're interested in learning more about it, I will include the link in the show yeah. notes so that you can check out the Huffington Post article. Yeah. It also has some other information about where you can get other mm-hmm. names and things like that, so you can get some other information.
And
as
the Huffington
well, so.
Post it digests it for you. You're not right. reading the scientific literature. You're reading something that's accessible
right.
to the layman.
Right.
So yeah, take a look at it.
Yeah, very interesting. And you know, there's a number of places around that do that mm-hmm. do that type of procedure, the neurofeedback and QEEG and those kinds of things. And as I said, we're hoping to
move in that direction.
Move in
ourselves.
That direction here. So yeah. we've been looking to it for about a year now. So
right,
but it is a process as well. So mm-hmm. yeah. All right. Well. Have a great day today. Make sure that you take advantage of the nice weather. Get outside and walk. We went for a walk last night, and it was so nice. It was windy and nice and cool, and it was...
We grilled some vegetables outside last night.
See?
My daughter loves grilled vegetables, so we were able to get out. It was nice.
Mm-hmm. So take advantage of that, yeah. and make sure you get a good night's sleep tonight, and then... We'll see you bright and early tomorrow morning.
Wednesday. Yep. Tomorrow's Wednesday.
All right. Yeah. Tomorrow's letters from the listeners.
Letters from listeners. All so right. let us hear from you.
We've received some very nice comments on iTunes and some nice reviews on iTunes. So if you have a chance, if you could jump on there and leave a comment or hit a rating for us, that would be fantastic. We would really appreciate it.
Yes.
And the same on YouTube. Share it. Subscribe right. to us on YouTube. We're constantly trying to get get information out there. And always trying to produce things to get out there for everybody.
Right? Right? Yep. Let us hear from you.
All right. Okay. Have a terrific day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Good day.
Bye-bye.